switches, puts up the three. Long go. Rebound box. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
Ovechkin, full blast the other way. Fires. Score! Work at both ends of the rink, and the Caps win.
Here come the Leafs. It's their turn to center Austin Matthews with Connor Brown. In under Kaiser. Carter comes up late. His pass side of the net. Matthews backhander scores!
It'll be Wade up top. He gets a pick from Bosch. Wade turns the corner behind his back. Bosch for the lead. Got it. 5 tenths left. Bosch.
And we are back on the crunch, folks. How you doing? I'm your host, Nick LaPenna, in here. I got to get something off my chest, okay? 2 weeks ago, we had a huge snowstorm, okay? Snow day. All Radio Laurier and, frankly, Laurier University amenities closed, including classes. Last week, we have reading week, okay? So I haven't been on the radio in 3 weeks now, and boy, it's felt like a long time, and I got a lot to unpack, let me tell you. Right after the break here, when I do the intro, I'm going to bring in revered Toronto analyst Dan Vandervaart to talk Leafs hockey and their lack of moves at the deadline and outlook for the playoffs before transitioning and breaking down the Marc Gasol trade, his impact so far, whether he should be starting, as well as some brief thoughts on LeBron James and if he is hurting more than helping the Los Angeles Lakers. They're still out of a playoff spot. Before finishing with a WGC Mexico recap, one of the first big tournaments of the year where a lot of eyeballs were on the Big Cat as well as others. I'll break down that tournament, what I see, what I take from this first, you know, big and meaningful event towards putting it forward, because we got a lot of big tournaments coming up, folks. Players' Championships coming real soon. And before you know it, it'll be the Masters. So we have a lot to unpack. I'll be back right after this break. But folks, it's good to be back after a bit of a 3 week break, a little long for me. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. I'll be right back. And we are back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:05 Eastern, 4:05 Pacific. I'm your host, Nick LaPenna. And joining me now, Toronto Leafs analyst Dan Vandervaart, based out of Toronto. Dan, how you doing?
Pretty good, Nick. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, so, look, I'm curious about your Leafs outlook here going into the playoffs. Obviously, no moves at the deadline. We'll get to that in a sec. But how do you think this team is built in terms of a long run into the spring?
You know, that's always the question going in, Nick. You know what? Everybody knows it's not a big secret. The Leafs need a little bit of help on the back end. I was a bit disappointed at the trade deadline that they didn't make any moves to improve themselves back there. I really thought there was a couple of outlier type trades that could have been made that would have made the run a little bit more solid this year.
Yeah, I hear you. Actually, I was a bit disappointed. I was following intently, and there was a ton of trades at the Trade Central registry, and Leafs were part of one of them. But it ended up just being a move for Nick Pétain and flipping Par Lindholm. So you're right, not much movement there. How have you liked Nylander here, as he's now returned for about, close to half the season, over 30 games? What have you seen from him recently?
You know what, Nick, Nylander's an elite player. He truly is. I mean, my only thought there is that at the end of the day, as a fan, you look at it and you think to yourself that he didn't really give us much of a discount on his contract. He kind of held out. He got everything he asked for, so I really didn't feel like we're obligated to keep him. We've got a number of elite scoring players, and I kind of think that myself that he's a piece you could hold out there if you get a top defenseman back. I mean, that's a tough trade to make for sure, but I mean he's going to be a amazing. Like, there's no doubt about it. But you know, we're pretty loaded up front. We can afford to trade him out.
I hear you. And let me say one thing as well. I think he's been really good recently. He's been skating a lot better, even though the points have still eluded him to an extent. But I think he's really helped out Kadri. Kadri, back-to-back 30-goal scorer. And this year really tailed off in that first, I'd say, 20 to 30 games, was really struggling. And I don't fully blame Kadri. You know, when you're playing with a guy like Connor Brown and bouncing around, he was with Par Lindholm for a bit, and maybe Janssen, you're not going to score that much. And I think it's been nice to see that duo back, though Kadri's out at the moment with concussion-like symptoms. But I really like the move that the Leafs made. I know it's a bit irritating when you're really working in cap difficulty, but I like to look at it from this perspective. If the Leafs didn't have Matthews and Marner coming up on contract years and they were already locked in, would we really be complaining about Nylander $6.97 million? I get it. It was a little high, and I was a bit irritated at the time, but now that I'm watching him skate and really play well, and honestly, he's looked consistent. These last few games, there's no one that's looked more dangerous out there than Nylander, other than maybe Matthews. But even Marner, you know, is prone to an off game here and there, though I still think he's better.
I 100% agree with you. I watched last night's game, and you know, his effort level was right up there. He competed for the puck in all the corners. He works hard, and he's got, again, we use that word a lot in the industry, but it's elite skill, right? He has all the tools, and I'm not complaining about his contract at all. All I'm saying is that, you know, sometimes you're going to look at it, if you've got 12 hammers in your toolbox, it might be nice to trade some of those guys out for a wrench. Right. And you know, that's kind of the situation we're in. I just want to give a couple of thoughts I had on some of the, like, outlying kind of ideas that I think the Leafs missed out on in trying to improve their back end. Like, there's a couple of pieces out there that would have done a good job to help the Leafs this year. And maybe, you know, and you know, you always got to give something to get something. I'm going to say, first of all, I thought that, you know what, Ben Lovejoy is a good penalty killer, a defenseman, certainly not a goal scorer. But you know, we've got a lot of puck moving defensemen, and I thought that when he went from New Jersey to Dallas for, I think, like Connor Carrick and a third round pick, you know, that was a missed opportunity for the Leafs there. That you know, New Jersey could have done something like given, you know, like a Zaitsev back with a pick or a prospect or both, which seems like a lot. But would have helped alleviate long-term some of the Leafs' cap crunch, and would have improved us defensively today. I kind of thought that would have been a good idea. But you know, those are such things that I feel like we missed out on.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. Another name that I could have thrown in that category is Adam McQuaid. He was moved to the Blue Jackets from the Rangers. Same type of idea. You know, not gonna really wow you in any sense of the imagination, but pretty steady on the back end, doesn't turn the puck over too much, will lay the body in, which is nice. And he moved to Columbus for just a fourth and a seventh, and along with a low-end prospect. So I agree, they could have moved someone. I mean, you got guys like Connor Brown on $2.1 million really playing at a level of a guy who's worth $750,000, right? And we're in cap crunch. I wouldn't have minded seeing him move. I know Edmonton was inquiring about him, but you're right. We need a little bit of help on the back end. We don't need another first, you know, over or a top two defenseman if it's, you know, a really heavy cost. But you're right, a little bit of helping and some physicality, which brings me to my next point. Wayne Simmonds, Leafs made a formal offer for him based on a report here, but he ended up moving to Nashville. How would you have liked the fit with Wayne Simmonds?
You know, I didn't follow that because the trade never happened. I didn't follow that rumor so much. But I mean, obviously, having Wayne Simmonds on the team is nothing but a positive. It's at the end of the day, it's a shame they didn't do more. They really are, you know, kind of an outlying, you know, a little bit of a dark horse to try to win the cup this year. And I feel like one or two pieces would have really improved their odds. And it's a shame they weren't a little bit more aggressive.
I'm with you. Last question here. I know you're busy there back in Toronto. Mitch Marner, contract coming up. How much do you think he'll get signed for? And how does that impact some of the second-tier RFAs like Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Janssen?
You know, it's funny. At the beginning of the year, people were throwing around numbers, you know, $7.5 million, $8 million for him. And then he went on this, it was just on fire. And then all of a sudden the numbers got crazy and people were talking, you know, 10 plus. I really think that his contract's going to settle in somewhere around $9 million. I don't really think he's going to be, too much higher than that. He's a dynamic player. He's a playmaker, but it's still really early for him. I think around $9 million.
Yeah, I hope it's around $9 million. I have a sneaky feeling that we'll see double digits with him. I know he doesn't have the ego of Nylander, and he, and his agent has already said though that they're looking at really getting his true value. However, I'm with you. I think it'll settle around something like 8 years, $80 million. I don't see it going much more than that. And then, we'll have a little bit of space left in terms of re-signing a mixture of Kapanen, Janssen, Gardner, and Hainsey. I think Gardner's the odd one out. How about you?
Oh, for sure. I think there's a slim to none chance that Gardner's back, just because, there are teams out there who are going to offer him, $5+ million, and I don't think the Leafs can support that. Especially having, on their roster, Zaitsev at $4.5 million, and I think his contract goes to 2024. So, that's a long time to carry that, unless they can manage to work some trade magic for a guy like Zaitsev. There's no way that Gardner will be back.
I'm with you 100%. Dan, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it and hope to have you back in due course.
Always a pleasure, Nick. I love talking to you.
All right, folks, stick around. Right after the break, I'm going to break down the Marc Gasol trade and what I think his impact is. So this is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. We'll be back. And we're back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:20 Eastern here. And let me tell you something, okay? When Jonas Valanciunas got traded from the Raptors, it really stung, okay? It really stung badly because he's been a part of this team for better part of 7 years. And it's tough to let someone go when you know the value is likely better but not much better. And what do I mean by that, okay? So we traded DeMar DeRozan, who was also here for a better part of almost 9 campaigns, I believe, or it was 8. And it was tough to see him go. However, in return, we get literally a top 5 player in the world in Kawhi Leonard. And look what he's doing now, right? So, no doubt, it hurt. But we got a real good piece in return. And that was always evidenced by this weekend when DeMar lost the ball with just seconds left, stolen by Leonard himself, and dunking it for the win. Fantastic. We pick up Marc Gasol, and I really like Marc Gasol, so I hope this trade works out. But, I'd be lying if I said it didn't sting to see him, go to the Memphis Grizzlies. Marc Gasol's been good. Couple games of 16 points here in the Raptors, few games lower than that. His impact has been real. There's no doubt about it. He's just a really, really pass-first big man. He's a strong pass-first big man. And that's the type of guy we need here. He's versatile, can shoot the three, etc. Here's the problem I have with it right now. And it's not his fault. It's Nick Nurse's fault, who I also like, the coach. When you get a guy who's former all-team defensive, right, he's got the accolades to back it up, and he's coming off the bench, it feels like a wasted opportunity. Look, I know that the league is getting smaller, and you need to be quick. You need to be versatile. We get all of that. However, when you get a guy like Marc Gasol, prime star, multi-time all-star, you got to start him. There's no excuse. can fit in Serge somewhere else. You can fit Siakam any way you want it. Personally, I like Siakam coming off the bench to start because he can feast on defenses. I mean, he's like a star on the second unit. And by the end of games, you ride the hot hand, right? If it is, you know, the small ball that seems to be working that game, sure, leave Siakam and Ibaka out there, right? If you need a big presence like you will against teams like Boston, right? Against teams like Philly with Embiid and Aaron Baines is sneaky good down there. And he's a lot, okay? He's a lot to handle. Maybe you want to play big and you leave Serge and Mark out there. But I think it's disrespectful and I think it's a really bad move by Nurse to leave him on the bench. You know, the Raptors have a few players headed to free agency, okay? And two of them are two of their best players. Don't get it twisted, okay? You got Kawhi Leonard, we all know, headed to free agency, linked to L.A. I hope he stays. I have a bet on that he stays, and I have good odds. I have 10-1 odds, and I didn't bet all too much, so it's mostly upside for me. But it's not a for sure slam dunk that he stays. And if you want a guy like Marc Gasol to stay, you should give him a bit of respect. You should really start him. He's earned it. He's earned it over his career. And he's 34 now. But this guy can play ball. Simple. And the Raps have a huge game tonight against the Celtics. Primetime game. I think this would be a perfect time after a few games to get integrated to really put him out there and to really, really wreak havoc on the Celtics. This is definitely a team that the Raptors have to keep an eye on as we enter March, as we enter April, as we enter the playoffs. That's when the real season starts. And look, if you can exploit a matchup, you got to do it, right? Aaron Baines is a lot to handle. I mentioned that. But he's no match to Marc Gasol. Simply no match, right? And in a situation where Boston has the upper hand in a lot of these matchups, right? Kyrie over Kyle Lowry, no doubt, okay? Shooting guard, depends who they play. Hayward has taken a step back, but Hayward, Jaylen Brown, even Tatum, if they play big, yeah, they're likely better than Danny Green, right? Al Horford, don't forget about him. He can play ball, flat out. So when you're matching up guys like Siakam and Ibaka, not many advantages in the matchup game, maybe even on a few, but Marc Gasol over Aaron Baines, no doubt about it. No two ways around it. Mark's a big guy. He plays on the inside, and he can shoot the ball. He's versatile. He's the type of guy that the Celtics would not have a matchup for. Point blank, period. So I hope they exploit him tonight. And Boston's definitely a team you might see in the playoffs, right? Philly as well, they look good. Joel Embiid's a monster. And it's funny, Joel's always struggled against the Raptors when we had Valanciunas. That's why I really like JV, either starting or off the bench. Because I knew that the Philadelphia 76ers, a legit team, were having struggles. And so, I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. I think the impact is there. I think the potential is there. But we got to utilize him correctly. He's not going to want to stay if we try and play small ball, keep him off the bench for next year, right? Just not feasible. So we'll have to see on Marc Gasol. I hope he stays. I think he will stay. I think there's a good chance of that. But we got to utilize him. I hope to see him utilized well tonight. Boston's a matchup team that the Raptors can use him to their advantage, right? And a quick note on JV. You notice he goes to Memphis. He's putting up literally 20 and 10. Like, I've been preaching this for years. The guy's a monster, okay? Give the man the ball. Give the big guy the ball on the inside. Legit threat, offensive weapon. And it's great to see him doing well in Memphis. We wish him the best here. He was a great, great guy. tremendous player, and he took his lumps, right? Casey hated him. He put him on the bench. He didn't give him the ball. Nurse gave him touches, but again, off the bench, right? He could have been sixth man of the year. Now he's in Memphis going 20-10, and they just beat the Lakers. So, I don't know. You tell me, but I like this Marc Gasol move at the end of the day, but we got to utilize him. We got to utilize his full potential. Let's talk LeBron here, okay? And look, I've been saying this for a long time. LeBron loves drama, okay? And let's be fair, who doesn't like a little bit of drama? Doesn't matter what career line you're in, whether it's office gossip, right? Whether it's having the attention on you. In this case, it's the media for LeBron. But everyone likes a bit of gossip. The problem is LeBron loves the gossip, and it's becoming a bit of an issue. There's just simply no doubt about it, okay? In the offseason, LeBron signs the 4-year deal. Good for him, right? Big money move. Leaves Cleveland after last year, if you recall, forcing the manager to trade half the team for a bunch of new blood. Didn't matter, right? Got pummeled. Okay. Goes to the Lakers. Knows it's a young team. They struggle a bit. They're okay. All right, we have the classic LeBron fans on TV, in the media, talking about how great he is. Yada, yada, we get it. Okay, second best all time. I'm with you. But then he gets hurt. And then the team struggles without him. And then before you know it, LeBron, who's not even playing a game, is the front and center headline trying to trade his team for Anthony Davis. I mean, LeBron, give it a rest, please. You knew the Lakers, okay? You knew their roster. You knew their organization. You signed a 4-year deal. Why the heck are you trying to blow up all the young talent for Anthony Davis? If you wanted to go to a team who could win now, there are an abundance of teams, okay? Toronto, for one. You can even go, you could have ventured off. I'd even say Philly was a possibility with Ben Simmons. We remember those rumors. Could have went anywhere, okay? Could have went anywhere. Could have went west as well, other than the Lakers. I know the Rockets were linked to him for a bit. Could have went to the Thunder if he really wanted to. Right, look, my point is that when you make a 4-year commitment, you got to understand that you can't just tear up the team so you can win right now, right? It's like a baby. He wants the candy right away. You got to tell him it's not healthy. It's not part of a good long-term strategy. But the candy is sitting right there, and the baby doesn't care, and he wants to eat it. LeBron is a drama issue. Just, it always has to be something with him. And now it's actually starting to affect the team. Tried to trade the whole team. Their morale is down. No one wants to play for a guy who just comes in, thinks he's a superstar. He is one, but thinks he's the greatest of all time, not just a superstar, and tries to get rid of you. Right? Think about it at your workplace. You get some hotshot executive comes in from a different company, well-known in the industry, and then tells you basically to your face, yeah, we want to get rid of you. And it turns out he can't get rid of you. You really want to collaborate with him? Not really. Did he apologize? We don't know if LeBron did, but he should. It's just disrespectful. Trying to uproot families just for your own personal gain. If you want to go to a contender, you could have went to a contender. You were linked to a few contenders. I don't know what it is about the obsession of LeBron. And don't get me wrong, great guy. A lot of philanthropy. Second best player of all time. 3 rings. 6 losses in the finals, true. But still 3 rings. That's impressive. But he can't help it. He can't help the drama. He just can't do it. And there's a reason he's lost 6 times. Because chaos will eventually catch up to you. Talent can only take you so far. Even hard work can only take you so far. You need a structure, you need some organization, and you got to limit the chaos. And LeBron can't do it. It's just how he operates. It's just like a certain president operates as well, though I'm not comparing the two in any shape, way, or form. After the break, I'm going to break down the WGC Mexico Golf Championship. That was the first big golf event of the year. Dustin Johnson wins it. I'll break down some of the big performances by some of the stars as we get ready for an earlier meet of the schedule on the PGA Tour. Players' Championship's coming up, and Augusta is just around the corner. Folks, this is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. Stick around for more. And we're back on The Crunch, folks. How you doing? 7:41 Eastern Time, 4:41 Pacific Time, and something 41 everywhere else in the world. I'm going to break down the World Golf Championship in Mexico. It's at Club de Golf Chapultepec. And, you know, this is one of those tournaments that really kick off the year because it's not a major, but it's one of those World Golf Championships that is a big event. All the big boys come out, only 72 golfers. You know, just the stars. And it was a pretty entertaining one until late on Sunday when Dustin Johnson pulled away 21 under to win his 20th tournament on the PGA Tour. That gives him lifetime exemption. He can play any tournament he now wants for the rest of his life. 20 wins will do that for you. Rory McIlroy came in second, 16 under. At the end of the day, this is one of those places at high altitude in Mexico where if you can drive the ball, you can do anything, right? The ball carries a lot further when it's hot, when it's moist, and when you're in low altitude, that thing just carries. It's like a missile, right? Imagine playing golf on the moon. We'd all be driving it, you know, 500, 600, 700 yards. So it's pretty interesting to say the least. And, you know, pretty fair that the big boys came out and won. Tiger Woods tied for 10th. 8 under par. He played well. And the problem with Tiger was his putting. It's been letting him down recently. A multitude of three putts. And honestly, he should have been at least third, if not higher. Right? Just the amount of three putts from within 4 or 5 feet is pretty embarrassing. No reason why he couldn't have at least 5 shots back. And then there were even some putts from 8 to 10 feet that he was among the lowest in the field as well. So if he converted a few more of those, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of ifs, and I'm concerned for Tiger's putting. I really am. Putting at the end of the day is really about sight. Okay? Everyone has a similar putting stroke. It's pretty, you know, pretty rare that anyone is completely different. You line it up, you have the speed pretty well all the time, and you let it go. It's all about the eyes. It's all about reading the lines and reading the green. And we know guys struggle to do that when they're older, right? Eyes start to go. Personally, I have 20/20 vision, but my parents don't, and my little brother doesn't. And so I understand that eyes will never be there forever. And frankly, if we had to take a guess, and if you were a betting person, you'd probably bet that my eyes will eventually go bad because it's rare that someone has two parents with glasses and then stays at 20/20 vision for a very long time. Not going to happen. Tiger Woods, I think he's losing it a bit. There were some reads there that looked pretty straight, didn't look very difficult, and he misses on the low side, right? A slight right to left break, nope, misses on the low side, right? And these are from 7 to 10 feet. That's an issue. That's a real big issue. And so, look, at the end of the day, he came tied for 10th. Maybe not time to sound the alarm yet. Maybe some tweaks along the periphery can get him back. But boy, when you're that far off the leader at 8 under versus 21 under from DJ, you got to make some radical adjustments. Big Cat doesn't have many years left. He's got to do everything in his power to fix his game, and he has, don't get me wrong, he's played like a legit top 20 golfer over the past year plus, okay? He's been really good, but, man, if you want to win a major, you got to be better than just a top 20 and take a shot. You got to really be able to play golf and play to your highest ability that you can scare anyone on any given day. Let me give you an example of this. Justin Thomas came ninth. He went 9 under on the last day to finish 9 under par. That's the type of just elite talent that you can't find. That, you know, it's just tough to recreate. Tiger's done it before. He's played well. He played well at Bellerive last year at the PGA Championship. But do I really see Tiger just going out there and ripping 9, 10 under par? I don't. He's good. He's really good. But he's not great elite. And so I think he has to be one of those guys that continues to make adjustments. Really look at what's working, what isn't. And then going from that end and really trying to make something happen. So, again, I'm not looking too much into it. Dustin Johnson, though, congrats on your 20th PGA Tour win. But I think Tiger has to make some changes. I really do. And can he make those changes? I believe so. He's an all-world talent. He's one of the best of all time. But, you know, there were some really, really tough putts that were tough to watch. And we'll have to see here. We're going into the Florida swing now. And we got some big tournaments coming up, okay? Arnold Palmer Invitational, that's a well-known tourney. I expect we'll see a lot of big names there. Probably we'll have a lot of folks taking a break from the Honda Classic this weekend. But the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill is usually big money. And then the Players the week after. So those are two really big tournaments. You won't want to miss these. And so I'm excited. We'll see what happens, but I'm excited to say the least. I think we're going to have some pretty interesting golf these next few weeks on the PGA Tour. Folks, that's all my show for today. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. I want to thank any guests I've had, as well as the production team here at Radio Laurier. Huge NBA game tonight, Raptors basketball. They're taking on the Celtics, 8 Eastern. Okay, this is a primetime matchup. I hope Marc Gasol starts. I really do. He's the advantage in these types of games, especially against Boston, who doesn't have a center that can match up. Okay, Horford's good. He's not great. Marc Gasol is great. I'll be back next Tuesday. As always, thank you everyone for tuning in. You know, it was tough. It was tough that I couldn't get on the radio the last couple weeks. Some circumstances out of my control. Obviously, last week, though, was just reading week, so don't look into that too much. But I will be back on the Radio Laurier Network, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, and some other time. If you're listening around the world, that's all I have for today. I'm your host, Nick LaPenna, and this is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. We'll see you soon.